Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. State health officials say that bad weather in the lower 48 has delayed delivery of 3,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccine to Alaska. Alaska Public Media reports that some providers are having to postpone clinics until the vaccine arrives, and State Immunization Program Manager Matt Bobo says Alaskans should be aware that appointments could be postponed until next week.
We're working kind of through the mechanisms and making sure we can reschedule appointments and make sure everyone can get vaccinated. So we're definitely monitoring the situation and making sure our providers are up to date.
State officials add that it's fortunate that the weather delay happened during a week when Alaska was not expecting a large vaccine shipment. The state announced 209 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases yesterday. The cases reported Wednesday included 57 in Wasilla, 47 in Anchorage, 20 in Palmer, and 24 in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Other new interior region cases included one each in Healy, Tok, and the Yukon-Koyukuk census area. Four new seafood industry non-resident cases were identified in the Aleutians East Borough. Hospitalization numbers continue to trend down, with five new hospitalizations announced yesterday. A total of 37 patients were being treated for COVID in hospitals statewide, with three on ventilators. As of yesterday, the city of Bethel had gone 1 week without a new confirmed COVID-19 case. KYUK reports that it was the first full week with no new cases since early August of last year. Cases in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region began dropping before the winter holidays, rose again during and after the holidays, and have been declining since. The holidays also marked when COVID-19 vaccinations began in the region. As of last week, nearly 60% of the area's eligible population had received at least one dose of the vaccine. That's according to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. Over the past 2 weeks, the health corporation has announced an average of 12 cases per day. That's a steep decline from the region's pandemic peak in late November, early December, when the area averaged 66 new cases per day. Despite the recent declines, the region still maintains the highest COVID-19 case rate in the state, a position the YK Delta has held since October 2020. The YKHC encourages all Yukon Delta communities to remain locked down through the end of the month to continue to slow the spread of the virus. It also urges everyone age 16 and older to get vaccinated. A pandemic-driven decline in Fairbanks North Star Borough School District enrollment could significantly reduce funding for next year if the students don't return. The issue was discussed during a school board work session this week. KUAC's Robin reports.
A formula connects enrollment to dollars that come to Alaska school districts from the Department of Education and Early Development. This foundation funding formula is about $6,000 per student. With the drop in enrollment in Fairbanks area schools, there will be about $10 million less in state support next year.
An enrollment update as of last week, we're currently at 11,301 students. That is trending upwards, but we still haven't quite met our FY22 projection number of 11,319.
Andrew DeGraw is the district's chief operating officer. The board is working the budget around that projected number of students. During the pandemic, the district has lost nearly 2,000 students who turned to private schools, homeschooling, or just dropped out. Board member Jennifer Luke asked the staff if enrollment might rebound before the board's budget deadline.
All of the schools, are they doing reach outs to all of the families who left the district to ask them if they're coming back for next year?
Assistant Superintendent Luke Meinert told the board each school is trying to reach out to those absent families, and some have indicated they would return after spring break or in the fourth quarter of the school year.
Even if they don't want to come back for third or fourth quarter, having that conversation with them to enroll gives us a better indication of how many students we might have.
Assistant Superintendent Kate LaPlante says the district opened up registration for next year on February 1st.
So that families know that even if they're not sure what they're going to do for March and April, if they know they're going to come back next fall in August, that they can indicate that now, and then that will help us with the staffing and being ready and prepared.
The work session on Monday night was to focus on bus transportation and the best homeschool program. There are more budget work sessions scheduled for next Monday, February 22nd, March 1st, and March 15th. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The Alaska House of Representatives organized yesterday, but neither caucus was able to claim a majority. KTOO and Alaska Public Media report that the committee membership approved by a 22-17 vote allows the House to begin doing legislative business 31 days into the session. Two of those who voted for the committee say they won't caucus with a coalition that has had a majority the last 2 years. Anchorage Republican Representative Sarah Rasmussen said she won't caucus with either side and underscored that it will be unusual to not have a majority caucus.
I think it's kind of unprecedented, but it gives us an opportunity to have my voice. My district has a voice at the table, and I'm hoping that, you know, with compromise, we'll be able to get some good policy move forward.
Anchorage Democrat Garen Tarr also said she won't join a caucus. She was in the same caucus as the other Democrats in her first 8 years in the House. She wrote in a letter to House Speaker Louise Stutes that members became leaders by threatening to join the Republican caucus, and that joining Stutes' group would violate her commitment to, quote, honorable public service. Stutes, a Kodiak Republican, says she's confident she'll have the 21 votes needed for procedural matters necessary for the House to function, but declined to say who the 21st vote would be.
I would rather talk people than numbers, and we are open. We are working to create a good bridge between House members. And so I'm hoping that as time goes by, we will all come together.
Stutes says most members in her caucus are aligned on not drawing more than is planned from the Permanent Fund Earnings Reserve. Anchorage Democratic Representative Chris Tuck will be the majority leader, while Wasilla Republican Representative Kathy Tilton will be the minority leader. Research conducted by the Tanana Chiefs Conference and the University of Alaska Fairbanks demonstrates the value of small unmanned aircraft to monitor wildfire impacts in rural Alaska. KiwiC's Mary Auld reports.
It's more important than ever for communities to understand wildfire behavior as climate change alters fire patterns across the state. Small unmanned aircrafts or drones could help.
It's a very rapid assessment tool. It's cost effective. And I guess the other reason that I like the idea of using it is because it's something that even rural communities in Alaska could probably apply themselves.
That's Todd Brinkman, an associate professor of wildlife biology at UAF who worked on the project. TCC officials worked with researchers at UAF to decide what information the drones would gather. One priority was assessing the efficacy of fire breaks, areas where forest managers have thinned vegetation to protect communities from fire. Foresters at Tanana Chiefs Conference wanted to see whether those breaks would still protect communities from wildfire damage. They used drones to monitor fire breaks in Dot Lake, Tanacross, and Tetlin. In the past, foresters on the ground have assessed vegetation on foot to determine whether it will effectively curb the spread of wildfire.
It's very tedious.
That's where drones come in. The aircraft gathered accurate information about the fire breaks and required far less time and manpower than observing on the ground. Natural resource managers also use drones to monitor the way wildfires are impacting Chinook salmon in the Yukon River. Brinkman says resource managers in rural communities can get licensed to fly the drones so they can do the monitoring independently without the support of UAF. Once local land managers have the equipment and skills necessary to gather data by drone, they can use them on far more projects than just monitoring wildfire impacts. Communities could monitor erosion or permafrost thaw or forest makeup using drones.
I don't think this technology is going to go away. I think it will continue to expand and people get more familiar with it and they'll apply it to answer all sorts of questions.
For KUAC, I'm Mary Auld.
And I'm Dan Bross.